Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our panel discussion. We haven't had a panel at DNOG in, I don't know, 5+ years. So Thomas had the great idea to restart it and brought together a nice group of us. Tim will soon introduce everyone, but first of all, we're going to discuss 400 gigs today. I hope you have all listened yesterday during Andy's talk and took quite some notes, because that's what's going to be all about today. Just to give you a rough red line on what we're going to talk about, you're seeing in the bottom right the circles, and we're going to start in the data center, discuss how 400 gig can help us here. Then we move forward to the IXP dash interconnection layer. So we have our own data center. Now we want to interconnect with someone else. Then we'll move into the metro network. So let's say this is a 40 kilometers range somewhere within the same city or in the same region. And thereafter, we'll expand even further and talk a bit about long haul. So that's it from me. Tim, please introduce everyone else.
Yeah, hello, everyone. And thank you for having us here. I'll introduce the participants in this round, and I'll start with Theo Voss from Anexia. Theo, please.
Yes, my name is Theo Voss, as most of you know from my presentation yesterday. I'm head of network engineering for Anexia, and 400 gig is for us a very promising standard for the future. We're currently looking into this a lot, especially due to our profile as a carrier slash enterprise slash service provider with a lot of locations globally, more into solutions with less operational effort and also reduced complexity, but also into a high number of 100 gig links compared to a high number of links on one single stretch. So we're looking into interconnecting multiple locations by 1x400 gig instead of like high capacities on one stretch as maybe others in this panel do.
Okay, then we have Daniel Melzer from DEKIX.
Hi, everyone. I'm Daniel Melzer from DEKIX, and I work for DEKIX for quite a long time. At the moment as a network architect, and 400G is highly interest for us for the customer side, customer connections, as well for the backbone connections. Today we run a lot of legs, link aggregation groups, combining 4, 5, 6, 8, 9 times 100G, and there's certainly need for 400G in the near future.
And at this point, we really would have wanted to introduce someone from an FTTH operator, but unfortunately, we weren't able to find anyone. So for the next DNOG conference, if you're operating a maybe larger FTTH network, this could be interesting to have you in the conference, maybe for a talk or the next panel, whatever will come up. But let me introduce Florian Hippler from Arista.
Hi, my name is Florian. As Tim just mentioned, I work for Arista as a systems engineer. 400 gig for us is not only important in the hyperscaler space, but we also see a lot of benefits from 400 gig technology, improving existing 100 gig technologies. And therefore, this is something I would like to discuss with the people here today.
Okay, and then we have Harald Bock from Infinera, please.
Hello, my name is Harald Bock. I work in Infinera's CTO office, and I'm responsible for network and technology strategy. For us, 400 gig, and in particular 400 gigabit Ethernet, arrived as a service rate which our equipment transports a short while ago, and for us, this is pretty much technology that we sell today and that we deploy today. On the line side of our WDM systems, 400 gig is one of the main line rates which we deploy when we deploy one of our up to 800 gig WDM line interfaces. So for us, 400 gig is very much there today, and we see a lot of new applications for that coming up right now.
And last but not least, Thomas Weible from FlexOptics.
Thank you very much, Tim. Yeah, my name is Thomas Weibler from FlexOptics, co-founder and CTO. And let's say, like, this 400 gig is now, for me, the third revolution in optical networking. What happened in the last 10 years, I'm with FlexOptics now, started basically with the bleeding edge of 10 gig these days back. And now 100 gig is definitely around. And now we are talking about 400 gig, which is definitely a very, very interesting to talk about. And I'm really happy that we have this nice crowd together, because I think this is quite unique, unicorn setup, having all those people together from different areas with the need, and also what kind of possibilities they can offer as a system vendor or manufacturer to have now a discussion here at DNOG. I'm really happy about it. Thank you very much.
Okay, then I would say that we can start in the panel, and we will start with a smaller length, like in the data center. It's probably a good start to look at with which optics you would start, and maybe why should I care about 400G in the data center? I have enough fibers there, so I could just throw with fibers on the problem and just get a lot of more 100G ports.
Yeah. So that's true. And to start with, I think I'm going to catch up from the presentation from last night or yesterday evening from Andy Bechtel time, when he talked about OSFP and QSFP DD, the new form factors for 400 gig. I made a small comparison of both of them to give the audience a rough idea what are the benefits of it. So, and there's nothing much I can add actually to Andy's speech yesterday. The OSFP is definitely the pluggable form factor which can hold and get rid of the most heat, because it has just a bigger size compared to a QSFP DD. So in lab environment today, it's already possible to go up to 20 watts of power consumption, and also at the end of the day, heat dissipation. And the great advantage of OSFP is as well that he is ready for 800 gigs, so for the next revolution or evolution in optics. So the footprint is already defined, which is pretty great. On the other side, we do have the QSFP DD. DD stands for double density. It has a pretty unique or nice setup, because it's backwards compatible to QSFP28, which we broadly use in today's network for 100 gigabit transceivers. So in a 400 gigabit QSFP DD slot, you are able to plug in a QSFP28, which is pretty great when it comes back to backwards compatibility. And the last point here is it's very popular. So comparing QSFP DD with OSFP, the majority of system manufacturers went or jump on the QSFP DD, and on the public available components, only Arista is currently on the OSFP. That's something which I think differentiate here pretty much. Right.
Yeah, probably then also adding just a few words here from my side. I mean, as Thomas already said, Arista is like the only vendor jumping on the OSFP right now. But also then from the other perspective, I mean, we're on the verge of, well, it's kind of a new evolution. We're looking at 100 gigabit, 400 and 800 gigabit. So we're somewhere in the middle right now. I think it's still up to every network itself to decide if they want to go for, like, I want to be 800 gig ready from a transceiver perspective, or be backwards compatible because I have so many optics. So I think this is more or less the point here.
Yeah. And to just maybe add an example at this point, if you look at the network like ours, with a lot of POPs globally, where we try to keep all the equipment, all the blueprints we have as agnostic as possible in terms of technology, and you might have a different requirement in Sao Paulo than in Frankfurt, but shipping the same gear to reduce the complexity, the backwards compatibility is a big key for us, for example. It makes the decision for us, or shifts the decision much into the QSFP DD direction.
Yes, the same, it's true for us. So we see the advantages of OSFP, but at the same time, we need the flexibility from the QSFP form factor. That's one point. And the second point is on the paper, there's a broad support for OSFP, but in fact, if you want to buy a gear, it's, as of today, more or less just Arista, right? If you go to the other ones, there is nothing.
Yeah, but what is really important to mention? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah.
Okay, me too. But I think what's really important to mention when we are looking in the data center scope, that like being ready for 800 gig and also taking consideration the physics, that the OSFP really has an advantage when it comes to technology leadership. So the latest and greatest technology in optical components will always, most probably will always be implemented first in OSFP. So if you want to be the first having 800 gig equipment, then the OSFP really helps there. It will always be a little bit ahead because it's it can carry the load easier compared to a QSFP DD.
Okay, that makes sense what you all said, and I think we have very interesting aspects on both sides. I see Theo's point where he says that they are building rather small POPs and they need the backwards compatibility, but maybe to challenge you on this, and especially maybe Daniel, you have all your own data centers. And let's maybe get more into the direction of big data centers, big data center fabrics, where we don't really see the need for having a backwards compatibility, but rather as much bang for the buck as possible. Do you still see QSFP DD in that case? This is maybe to Daniel and Florian. Do you still see QSFP DD there as the leader because we still have the option of backwards compatibility, or would you rather jump on the feature train, as Thomas briefly highlighted, to get the newest and greatest features in an OSFP within your data center, where let's say backwards compatibility and also size, maybe adding a new device, doesn't really matter?
So for us, in the end, it's a trade-off, right? We have very big sites like Frankfurt, which is way ahead of all the rest, and then we have a lot of smaller sites, New York for instance, and really small sites, and we try to get the same hardware for all the sites, or make it fit for all the sites. And if you look at that, then QSFP DD or QSFP form factor is the best option as of today. So I'm with Florian. If you look in the future, maybe it's the wrong way, or there's a better way, yes. But if you look today, or if you want to buy hardware today, so there is no real choice, right? In our case, at least.
You kind of said it. The backwards compatibility is, I mean, obviously there is also backwards compatibility with an OSP form factor. With Daniel laughing because he knows, so there is a passive adapter essentially, which transforms an OSFP port into a QSFP DD port, QSFP port, sorry. On the other side, neither OSFP or QSFP DD port is just an extremely expensive 100 gig port, if you see it from that perspective. So I think no matter kind of which optic you would choose, or if you say you want to go future compatibility on 400, 800 gig versus backwards compatibility on 100 gig, you probably choose a switch which has QSFP 28 100 gig ports plus a few OSFP or QSFP DD ports, so that you can satisfy both worlds without burning actually ports or port speeds.
Yeah, just to get back on the pricing topic you mentioned. So that's, I think, important to keep in mind. I mean, it depends on the network you're running, but in our case, the price point for the particular port might be less important to us than the costs of operating, maintaining, qualifying, kind of, let's say, 10 different type of boxes, just to make sure to ship the perfect box to each location at the end. So which also might block the upgrade paths at some point. So I would recommend, in terms of pricing, not to only focus on the port price or single port price or the transceiver price, but also let's keep the big picture in mind in this case. At least for us, that's super important.
Okay, thank you.
For us, it's also not only comparison 100 G port and a 400 G port out of the same port or line card. It's more the mix we can get of a line card. So it's a mix of 100 gig, 400 gig, maybe breakouts out of 400 gig ports. So 4 times 100 gig or 10 times 10 gig out of 100 gig ports. So this is all the flexibility we can get out of the hardware today. Yes, maybe it's possible with adapter, but in the past I've used adapters only for corner cases where we had the need for a special solution, but it's not to use it for all ports, right? But maybe it's the option. But as I said before, there is just also no hardware available as of today.
All right, thank you for that. So first and foremost, one thing I forgot in the introduction, if you, dear listeners, have any questions, feel free to post them in the chat with, as you're used to, prefixed by Q, and we will answer them in the end. We have reserved like 15 minutes for that. But I had a question burning on my tongue at Andy's talk, but I was too busy to ask it there, so I'll ask it here. and with background focus for the data center, can we finally get rid of electrical, so copper-based connections with 400 gig, or is there still need for something like, I don't know, breakout cables with copper? Do you see anything like this? Is this necessary, or can we finally declare copper dead?
Well, Thomas,
I have an opinion. You mentioned DACs, direct attached cables. Yes, they are cheap. They are broadly used, but yes, they make also a lot of trouble. And when I think about 400 gig direct attached cables, they will be really more like a rod, like really thick, and you have plenty of them. Then you really have to think about all the mechanics. How you just imagine 32 DACs thicker than my finger on your line card. This is a lot of tension on that line card. So yes, I totally agree. Would be great if we could get rid of the ACs. Yeah.
Well, at least from the 100 gig deployments I see so far, most of the servers are being shipped right now with 25 gig. Breakout cables, particularly in the classical enterprise space, you see them on a daily basis. Usually inside rack deployments are mainly built with duct cables. This is at least what I see from my customers. And this is not a design decision made by Arista or something like this, because the duct cables are usually shipped with the servers. But there we see a lot of breakouts, yes. And like the classical QSFP 28, 100 gig to 4 times 25 QSFP 25. So yeah, this is, I don't think they will disappear in the future. The distances will get shorter, that's for sure. But I don't think they will really go away.
Yep. I agree.
I'm sad to hear it. but it's the way it is. Tim, do you have any further questions?
I think we can jump in with one question from the chat, as it relates to the transceiver discussion right now. Andy talked about a higher failure rate of QSFP-DD. Do we also already see them today in the networks? Has anybody a comparison from the field?
From our side, I can say we see both. So we see DD or QSFP-DD and OSFP requests. I can't point to a direction where I see more. It's balance currently.
Okay, so no higher rates right now in the field out there, but maybe too early to say that. Yeah. Okay, let's move
From experience, I would expect that a lot of the failure rates right now are still governed by the introduction of the new technology. So I don't think you would see fundamental differences between technologies at this stage, because even if you introduce new mechanical things like connector types, you will see failures at first, because you're introducing something new. I think this is the same thing that we see with QSFP DD and OSFP right now.
Okay, then let's move more from the data center to our metro areas. And I think the interesting question would be how, what's the main advantage of having 400G than legacy 100G technologies in our metro applications?
Okay, then probably let me start. What I see there is up until probably a few weeks or month ago, 400 gig was pretty much limited in range. What came out now with the and that's actually why 400 gig is a cool driver for 100 gig is the single 100 gig lambda LR optic, which has a reach of 4 kilometers. The optic is cheaper than an LR4, but obviously it's incompatible with an LR4. I think this is some of the great improvements we see from 400 gig towards 100 gig. And I hope it will become the new de facto standard actually for 400 gig because the optic is also more power efficient.
From my point, I definitely see there is a huge improvement, and I totally agree to also to Andy's speech from yesterday evening, that we, when we look back to 10 gigabit networks in the metro area, we had really nice setups with pluggables with SFP plus DW demo. Before that, XFP using a passive filter, it works straight out of your box if you want it, using a passive filter, and you were able to light up to 80 kilometers, no issue, or when you add the filter, then maybe 60 kilometers, pretty easy with that. In the field of 100 gig, and we might bring to slide number 3, there was always a little bit an issue because QSFP 28, the really interesting form factor, didn't handle up to 25, roughly 40 kilometers. Now in the last couple of months, it came up to 80 kilometers, but not in a really nice setup. So you were really stuck somehow there to using proprietary technology and transponders or the CFP2s. Now in 400 gig, this is definitely a game-changing game here now that again, the QSFP or OSFP, I don't point to the form factor now, but in basic that the technology itself, how both are designed, you are able to light up again up to 80 or even more kilometers, which is pretty great. And it is again possible that you can do a similar setup like you did in the 10 gig world, if you want to.
Yeah, we see that particularly in the metro areas where we operated a huge number of POPs which are interconnected currently with 1x100 gig or multiple 100 gigs, but in most cases less than 4x100 gigs. So capacities, at least for us, are in the range between, or what we're going to is between 100 and 400. So, and we operate all these links usually without any further equipment, so just point to point. So we see a big advantage, especially cost-wise, on the ZR4 variants of 100 gig and 400 gig to keep again for us the operational effort and the amount of devices or equipment and also the costs down in the metro areas.
Yeah, and with
we see the same. So we have a long history using 10G DWDM optics, and at the time one problem was that they were not supported by the vendors, and the second problem was that the DWDM optics were long behind the gray optics, right? So 1 to 2 years behind. And with 100G, there was just no option to do that. DWDM pluggables direct in the router, and now with 400G, all those points are solved, or at least the promise is that the points are solved. So we have the DWDM pluggables direct with the start of the form factor. We have support by the vendors, and I think as all the big ones looking for the solution. So for 400G, Cetar and Cetar Plus, there will also be a good price point in the end. So all the points not good in the past with 10G or also 100G are now solved, hopefully. So for us, it's really interesting.
Okay, so maybe quick question to the vendors here. Do you have any estimates or gut feelings? Will we ever get to CR Plus? When will we get there? When do we need to actually to add amplification here?
Probably Harald first.
So that's a good question, right? So we have heard from some of the vendors, and Thomas may add maybe some more details. To get 400G setters, and I think end of this year, beginning of next year, we will have some samples or even ready products, and then it will be interesting to see how it performs, right? So our idea is to use the setters directly on the fiber to start small, and maybe add a filter to it to scale. And we hope that we can use it at least in the metro area. So for instance, in Frankfurt and on short distances between maybe 5 to 20 kilometers. So, but we have to test it, we have to prove it. And if it works, then it would be nice. Otherwise, we have to think about.
Yeah, no, it's definitely we see them by the end of the year. So we most probably within November, we get the first samples in, and they will have roughly 11-12 dB power budget. So then we will see how far we can get with filter, without filter. And the hope is there at least getting a reach with filter up to 20 kilometers or even more. This is the goal. This would be great. And without external amplification. And in the theory, it should work when we do the math on the attenuation and the other parameters, it should work. So let's see by the end of the year, Christmas present.
Harald, mm-hmm. Do you have something?
Yeah, actually, I think that this discussion shows to some extent how fragmented this metro market is, because there are many, many very different things that we look at as metro. I think what you just described is a very important part, especially in terms of volumes, which is very short reach, 20, what I would call very short reach, 20, 40, 80 kilometer for the 400ZR up to 120 kilometer metro. That is a pretty important field. It is something that in the past, actually, I don't see this as something that is a successor of so much of a WDM system, but this is actually something that succeeds a lot of dark fiber interconnect between sites in the past. And if you move beyond that, then a lot of metro networks actually are metro networks of telcos, of mobile operators, actually have a much larger degree of complexity, because they basically start with an aggregation stage that is beyond these 20 to 40 kilometers. So they extend to multiple tens of sites with low number of hundreds of kilometers of reach. And in order to efficiently run these networks, you also want to be able to interconnect wavelength bypass sites. So you would put ROADMs or other optical elements into them. And this is where even with a 400ZR approach, you run into limitations very quickly. And this is why there are other applications out, other options for interfaces out there, which are also going to be successful. And we can see that actually in the analyst predictions, because when 400ZR was announced, everybody was expecting the whole metro market will go to 400ZR. And now things are starting to get more realistic because there are applications where this is a very, very important interface type, and it'll certainly sell a lot into these use cases, but there are other use cases where other things are needed. And that's both in terms of form factor, because we will see 400ZR and 400ZR plus in CFP2 DCO form factors, because in that higher power form factor, you can actually extend reach, you can add additional features. And features can even be support for client services that a QSFP DD will not support, or an OSFP. And it can also be, as I said, reach and optical power level and so forth. The 400ZR in QFPGD will quite clearly have limits in terms of the number of times you can go through a ROADM or a filter, the reach it'll be able to achieve, even amplified reach. So this is then where other solutions start, and those, the ones that are available today, then go up to 800 gig per wavelength. So you can see that the breadth of what a metro market is quite significant. And the thing that is most different from what we've discussed so far is actually the US metro market, where a typical city will have 120 ROADM sites and reaches that may end up being the low four digit or several hundred kilometers, maybe up to 1,000 kilometers within a metro. That actually shows you can't address all that with a single format, not with a single form factor, but also not with a single modulation type or even the same type of standardized interface. That doesn't just work.
I agree with you there. If you look at optical switching, that's probably a whole different story. If you look at point-to-point, the classical data center interconnect, that's probably a complete different story. Also, if you then look into the ZR, Andy presented yesterday the colorless MUX, more or less. It can be done in at least an OSFP form factor. QSFP will for sure catch up. I'm pretty certain there. But then on the other side, for most of the companies, 400 gig on one fiber is actually quite some capacity. Most of them I see run one, two times 100 gig, probably on diverse fiber path. So if they would replace it with a single 400 gig ZR in a metro, let's say 20, 30, 40 kilometer reach, that should do pretty much. Thomas mentioned that the first optic, you mentioned it, the optics should arrive around this time, I guess, November, in your lab. I've seen them up and running in January in Santa Clara in our headquarters. This is the picture Andy showed yesterday in his presentation as well. So by that time, ZR Plus was not done, and I'm not 100% sure if it is specified yet. But even from that perspective, Andy, I think, gave a pretty good demonstration description yesterday.
I think 400G ZR for the start is now something like an MSA.
Yeah.
But it is not the interoperability is not specified to a similar level as the 400ZR. That's maybe something to note. The other thing is that the application you just mentioned is something, one 400G replacing a couple of 100Gs. That is something you would probably do using a 400G ER. That's something that Andy mentioned as well yesterday. So you can see how fragmented this market is and how cost driven, because they're for specific applications and specific reaches, there are different formats that are actually best. And 400ZR certainly will have to play an important role. But it's not the whole metro. It's a certain part of the metro. It's point to point. It's up to a certain reach, and it's starting above a certain reach. So you can see that this market is actually very colorful, which makes it very
very colorful. I want to add one thing there. I would like to combine the thing what Daniel said before when he compared, looking in the history a little bit about 10 gig. And what we all have to keep in mind is that in the 10 gig world, like ZR was never somehow standardized, and even DWDM was also not, let's say, a pluggable DWDM was never on the roadmap of layer 2 and layer 3 equipment vendors. So it was more like some cowboys did there something, and it's doable from the layer 2 and layer 3 equipment, make colorful light. Now, looking at 400 gig, all the homeworks were made correct. We have a nice form factor, which is nice, and it's not like a bucket. It's a nice form factor. We have great heat dissipation. And it doesn't matter if I'm talking about OSFP or QSFP DD. It doesn't matter. They are great. nice heat dissipation. You can integrate a lot of technology, and that's something which I think is really important. It has the awareness of all the vendors that colorful light DWDM is now on the focus of layer 2 and layer 3 equipment, which is also unique, or the first time that this started. And so I see a bright future of those pluggables, because especially when we look up to, let's say, 130 kilometers, which I still would define as metro, and beyond that, well, let's see. These are my couple of cents.
Probably one thing just to add to Harald, I think, especially with the ZR landscape, there's going to be a challenge for active WDM suppliers.
Definitely. So that's what we try to, for example, is we try to eliminate active. I mean, every active device has to be managed, has to be under support, etc. So we try to eliminate every single active optical device wherever possible. So that's why we see the big advantage in all these point-to-point applications, for example.
Okay, guys.
I think
fully agree.
Okay, Harald, please continue, but I'd like to switch topics thereafter, so but please make your last point.
Maybe just one comment on that. Where you can do that, where we can do that as an industry, that is of high value, because removing equipment always is something that helps reduce power consumption, which is something that we as an industry should have as a goal for all of us together. But there are many reasons why starting from certain reaches, you still put your WDM equipment in, because you just, I mean, transmitting something optically when you don't have to put some OEO conversion in between is just a lot lower power and a lot lower cost. The other thing is that that today networks have become more complex in terms of their business models and structure of ownership. So in many use cases that we see, the owner of the router or packet switch is not the owner of the WDM gear. So you will have boxes that provide demarcation at lowest power and footprint and cost possible. There are very different use cases, even in metro, that require additional equipment. So we as WDM vendors, we are not at all worried about our future in that field, because there is plenty of space in this market for the additional functionalities these boxes provide, which range from just providing demarcation and potentially encryption, which actually encryption is one of these things that actually made in the past couple of years made a lot of data center operators buy separate boxes where in the past they would actually just use pluggables in a router across the dark fiber. So you can see that we always have to look at a network as a combination of different functionalities, and we have to understand what is needed there. And if you do that, you will see that the picture is indeed colorful, and there's plenty of room for separate WDM equipment, for transponders and muxponders and aggregation switches and all these things that are separate from the router layer as well. So, yeah, no question.
Thank you, Harald. I think this really sums up very well the challenges or the cooperation we can achieve with 400 gig, and I'd like to take a bit up on that and go a step back, maybe to the interconnection layer. So obviously Daniel, as an IXP, is probably the one most hurt by this, but we've all been talking about our own network for now, but eventually we will have to interconnect with someone else. We want to peer an IXP, we want to set up a PNI with someone. And this is maybe directing more at Harald, maybe we want to set up an alien wavelength on another provider's system, or maybe we want to do something completely else I can't think of. What are your thoughts on this? And I'm free to see who wants to start here. No one? Daniel, maybe? What are your challenges?
So as of today, that's not really our business, right? We run a layer 2 platform and you can connect to us. So standard is LR4 for 400G, but we are not a provider of alien wavelengths as of today, at least.
I wasn't looking to highlight this at only alien wavelengths. I'm really just on the point of interconnecting networks, where are our challenges? How far are we? Maybe Daniel, what are your customers? Is there actually already a demand for 400 gig? Do you have 400 gig customers up that you can speak of?
So yeah, good question. So we started the support of 400G end of last year with the first line card available at the time, but the form factor and the form factor was CFP8 with the LR8 on the optical side, and there was just no demand for that. But now in the meantime, it starts, and I think we will have the first customers running 400G end of this year, beginning of next year, and we try to use LR4 for that, but it's just not ready, right? So we are just the beginning of the rollout of LR4 optics. So the option is either LR4 or FR4 at the moment, but on the long run, we try to use LR4 for sure. And at the same time, when we use LR4 for 400G, we look certainly at the single lambda 100G LR.
Are there also considerations to think about offering a DR4 interface where you can break out 4 times 100 gig, that you can connect 100 gig basically on a DR4 or DR4 plus interface with single lambda 100 gig to your customers?
That's what I said before, yes. So when we going for 100 gig or 400 gig ports, we will be able to use 400 gig or even 4 times 100 gig from the same port, same form factor. So that's the option, to use the ports flexible for what we need, 100 gig, 400 gig, maybe also 10 gig. That's the idea behind the QSFP, yes.
Okay, got it. Okay.
But there, also a quick question, is power consumption of the optics something you take into consideration when you look at that? Because I mean, obviously a 2 kilometer optic uses way less power than a 10 kilometer optic. And 2 kilometers of
power. You talk about the...
In the data center, right?
You talk about the customer connections or in general?
Customer.
So for customer connections, it's also a trade-off. So we try to have the same optic for all the customers, but we have a lot of data centers where FR4 or even CWDM4, it's not enough. And it's a reason why we go for the LR versions, right? But for the own equipment and connections, for own equipment, we use the short reach options based on single mode, so CWDM4 and also FR4 for 400 gig.
Okay. So Harald, is there something like an alien wave possible, or even other methods of handover to connect to an existing optical line system? Because I think to many of us out there, having one 400 gig wave between metros is interesting, or on the long haul. But renting a whole cable, setting up an optical transport system might be difficult. What are we looking at here?
And actually, this is one of the topics that I was referring to earlier in terms of the different business models that are out there. Today, if a network operator buys equipment, WDM equipment, they usually buy something that they would call an open line system, which enables you to put different alien wavelengths across that system. That's become a basic requirement for any metro equipment, certainly. Longer reach metro equipment, and in many cases this extends also into some of the long haul applications. So that's become very important, and it's become important not just because they want to sell channels to somebody as an alien wavelength, but also because this enables them to evolve their network more easily going forward. And this is something that maybe for the shorter reach connections is not so important, but if you have a more complex network build out you've put into place, then actually having to replace your whole network every time you put a new generation of routers with new pluggables into place, it becomes something you don't want to do. That's why people tend to separate functions in a way that supports their evolution path going forward. another reason why I'm not worried about us as a WDM vendor in this environment, because people tend to put a WDM layer into place, which is independent, which they can use to sell alien wavelength services if needed. In some cases, people are even considering spectrum as a services where they say, you've got so and so many nanometers of my spectrum, do what you want with it. And at the same time, this provides them a bit of stable infrastructure they can use to put, for example, different generations of optical interfaces next to that open line system, which often they try to keep independent from the routers, because like that they decouple the innovation cycles in different areas, which means that that, for example, the line system depreciation will run longer. They will keep it in place for much longer time versus, for example, the router equipment or the transponder equipment, where the transponders basically, line interfaces have an innovation cycle that is in the area of 2 years or so. You basically get to a new generation every 2 years, which is why we are starting to roll out 400G in an interoperable 400ZR form factor, while at the same time, we are also rolling out the higher end, higher spectral efficiency, higher capacity, 800 gig interfaces that are not yet interoperable at the same time. And so you can see the speed of innovation is only made possible by a very structured approach to building a network and separating it into different functions. This is where offerings such as a spectrum or a wavelength as a service also come into play for many of the multi-service and operators and carriers out there.
So what I also think is, like, when we're talking about alien waves, technology-wise, it has been around for a decade or even longer. It's technology-wise doable, but from a business model point of view, I think a lot of decision makers were not aware that, oh, we can offer a service called alien waves. And what kind of standard is that? Now, I assume the big players, like here on the German landscape, they have a DWDM network, which have VOAs in place, which have all the magic you can do in an optical line system. They already have that technology, but they were still a little bit of fear to, well, we give now a little bit freedom away that someone else can enlight our fiber, or at least a part of our fiber. Now, having 400 gig ZR as a standard as well, there is also on the counterpart a paper saying, well, hey, there is a standard for DWDM, which is great, and it's nothing proprietary. It doesn't give you the security that someone else will do nasty things, for sure, but at least you have a standard then. And this might enable also more carriers to say, well, okay, we have now a paper, we offered the product of alien waves, and not only two or three people in Germany. So this might be the chance that also big players, and hopefully the biggest shouts now, oh, we're going to be the first, and then the others will follow, which will be great, which would be good also for the community here.
Okay, perfect. I've skipped a little bit through the chat, and I saw that someone mentioned that Turk Telekom and Sayo, are already offering spectrum as a service. And of course, we built for the last congresses between Christmas and New Year for several years now, alien waves through different networks between Berlin and Leipzig to the Congress. So it's working with 100G networks. And when we're looking to the 400G optics, it probably might be easier in the future. And I see in the chat there are a lot of more carriers named like EU Networks, Colton, Retton, who also do spectrum as a service. So this might be indeed a new product to know about. And the second to mention, someone mentioned that also Mellanox now in VDR is supporting OSFP, just to have that also in the stream. And then I think from my side, I can look to Moritz.
Yes. So time flies when you're having fun, and we've been already talking for 50 minutes. So I'd like all of us to maybe come up with a closing statement on 400 gigs. I know we haven't briefed you on this, but hey, That's the fun of it. That's the fun of being a moderator. So Thomas, as you're laughing, please, your closing statement for current gig, and everyone else has like 30 seconds more to think about it.
Thank you very much, Moritz. No, it was really a pleasure having this round here to get a discussion opportunities with Phone and Gig. I'm really looking forward to it. Especially it makes a lot of fun also in terms for us. There will be new components in the transceiver as well, which are new challenges like the DSP. Never got my fingers to a DSP so close. So this is pretty cool. And yeah, I'm really happy with what we will see in the next couple of weeks and months.
Okay, then Theo, you're next.
Yeah, maybe I can add to this. So I remember the same, not this panel, of course, but the same discussion we had today. We had this with 100 gig, we had this, with kind of earlier standards and earlier speeds. But what I see, what I find really interesting is that we see a more standardized approach to things. And we also see, especially if you have a look on the audience and in the market here in Germany, we see more and more carriers like digging into this optical world. So talking about open line systems, alien waves, that's all, at least to me, it feels like kind of also the smaller carriers and providers becoming more educated in the optical world. And this is what I think is a big driver for the next and upcoming months and years. So we do not see only the big ones, the hyperscalers pushing this. Of course, they will keep pushing this, of course. But we see more engagement from let's say, all our community here in this field.
Great to hear that you think that mere mortals also get a say. So we're hoping for that. Florian, you're laughing so kindly. Your last statement.
I mean, also from the Arista point of view, Arista is all about standardization. So we have exciting times ahead of us. 400 gig is not fully specced out yet, as Harald mentioned as well. 800 gig is not around the corner, although it feels like it, as Andy spoke about it yesterday. But there are, as I said, just exciting times ahead of us. And I think everyone in the regular service provider carrier world can also benefit from the hyperscalers here, who put a lot of effort into this, particularly around this like single lambda technologies, and also the power efficiency. It is a big driver for our customers to get power costs down, particularly in the data centers. Network might be a small proportion of it, but it's still significant. So yeah, keep on looking on new technologies. It was a great pleasure to discussing with all of you. And if anyone wants to reach out afterwards, OSFP is still the thing.
Bold statement here. We'll not go into this again. So Harald, first of all, we're glad to hear you're still gonna have a job as DWDM vendor. Are there any other statements besides that there is still a future for you, which we are all very happy about?
So am I. I think for me, there's, I think, a very, I mean, first of all, 400G for me is there today. It's today's topic. We'll see. I do believe that 400G has two major aspects. One of them is as a standardized solution that allows interoperability, which is important in allowing for open and disaggregated networks. Which allows us to drive faster innovation, but then we also see innovation within 400G towards more interesting or more complex things like 400G solutions like providing, for example, aggregation into 400G, which is one of the things that we are working on. But at the same time, this is an interesting thing because at the same time, the next line rate 800G is around the corner, and it truly, just like Andreas yesterday, I truly believe that's the case. We are starting to deploy 800G wavelength, and 800 gigabit Ethernet is also almost available. So I think we are again confirming that we are a very, very innovative industry, and that's something that's very encouraging to see even at this step that we are taking. I look forward to go through these changes with all of you.
I think we all are, and 400 gig and beyond are still unimaginable numbers, and especially as Andy yesterday announced a switch with 50 plus terabits capacity in two rack units. I mean, DKIX would love to have this on its traffic graph. So Daniel, when will we see 50 tera traffic peaks at DKIX, or what is your closing statement on the topic?
So that's hard to say. I predicted 10 terabit for 2018 and I was wrong. So no prediction for 50 terabit, right, from my side. So yes, thank you for this round and I hope we can do this again soon. And we as DKIX will get 400 gig up and running very soon for customers and also for our backbone. But I think it's only a small step, right? So we have to look what comes next and what's the next big thing. And maybe it's based on the OSFP. We will see.
I'll give you two rooms to discuss that later.
This is going to be a dark room.
I think so.
All right, everyone.
Thank you.
On behalf of the program committee, I would very much like to thank Thomas who organized this whole panel. It's been great. We haven't had panels for a long time at DNOC, and I think it's a great way to listen in, to hear more than just one voice on a topic without bloating the panel with three or five different vendors. So yeah, thank you, Thomas. Thank you to all our lovely panelists. As you can see, this panel, first of all, still lacked some room from an FTTH industry. We would love to have someone discussing this with us. So if you want to reach out. Also, and this is not a critique to any of you beautiful guys, but this panel is lacking diversity and we'd also like to see that change. So if you want to speak at a panel, do not hesitate to reach out to us at pc@lists.dnoc.de. I truly think we will have another panel in the near future. If you have an interesting topic, want to organize it, please also step up. We will gladly help and connect you to our community. And yeah, I think that's it from my side. That's it from this panel. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to the chat for great input. Thank you all for a great conference. And we'll see you all soon in the closing. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.